A lot of people are starting startups. But when you ask them why, if you see the answer is not concrete enough, it's not valid enough, if you are not able to connect that to a bigger reason, it's not worth the fight, right? A bigger purpose, it's not worth the fight, because you will have to fight for it, right? You will have to earn it, whatever it is. If you don't have roots down there are helping you to fight for it. I've seen a lot of people quitting just because they don't have a big why.
Welcome to the Entrepreneur Tell All podcast, where aspiring entrepreneurs come to hear the motivational and inspirational stories of those who've come before them. I'm your host, James Makuto. Welcome to the show. Today's guest is Mustafa Amar, the founder and CEO of The Passion MBA, which is a global coaching company that has helped countless professionals around the world find and pursue their dream careers. He's also the author of Time to Move On, which is a book that unpacks common career myths. Prior to this, his expansive career spanned the pharmaceutical industry, international diplomacy, and investment banking. Welcome to the show, Mustafa.
Thank you so much, James. It's a pleasure being with you today.
Mustafa, at a first glance, you know, we could say that you're the type of person who's done and tried it all, right? You've transitioned, you know, from what you yourself has described as a five career life, and you're currently on number five, which is the Passion MBA. Could you take me back in time and walk me through, let's call it lives 1 through 4, and how you got to number five, please?
Yeah, sure. You know, when you start, you don't know how the journey will end up taking you. And I thought, you know, when I was 16 years old, I didn't know where to go, and I had to choose something. And I chose the subject that I was very passionate about, and that time was chemistry. I decided to go for pharmacy that has all types of chemistry. That was the start. 5 years of study of chemistry, I think, was enough for me. I knew by the end of the fifth year, and I was almost graduating, that it's not for me, and I have to change. I had to dig deeper into my old dreams and see if there is another profession that I would dream to be in, and I found diplomacy. It wasn't easy, so I had to take some time to decide, reflection, and make sure this is for me. So I had to fight for it. And almost it took 1 year and a half to decide. So while working as a pharmacist, I had to prepare myself for that. It's a national competition. So every couple of years, they have a competition. It's a few phases, 2,000 contestants. Then they take 20 or 30. So it was a big deal for me. Luckily, after a failed trial and another successful trial, I made it. My life changed as a diplomat. You get to travel around and you know, enjoying representing the feeling of representing your country, your culture, and it's another world. I work in Africa, sure. In Malawi. I work in the UN in New York. I also work in China. Somehow, after 10 years of diplomacy, I thought I reached the peak of my career. And this is where I started thinking of what's next, you know, the big question of, okay, what I can do afterwards. And also it took me some time to decide. And the answer came in investment banking. So I moved to a multinational investment bank. It's called the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, AIIB, which is very similar to the World Bank in nature. So it does sovereign lending on infrastructure projects. It does also private sector. Was a whole new experience to me, because I was moving to a startup multinational development bank. So it's something like the World Bank 75 years ago. Very interesting experience. That moment, I work on energy project. That's why right before we start our call, when you mentioned your energy expertise, was an interesting part also of my life, working on energy projects all around the world, from Asia, Middle East, all the way to Latin America. I enjoyed that time because it was a whole new experience where you grow, you learn from scratch, you start something new, you use your expertise in diplomacy or pharmacy, your skills, and bring them to the new experience. During those 4 years, I decided to do my MBA. And I thought I was doing my MBA to grow more in that career. So I did it in the UK while I was working back in China, in Manchester University. somehow, because doing an MBA is like exploring different possibilities. You know, it's a generalized education where you knock on different doors, you know. So I saw myself, I saw my future self in many different places. So I saw my future self as an entrepreneur, a startup founder, you know, an investor, many things. And this is how I ended up leaving both banking. And also I was on leave from diplomacy. I left diplomacy and I started my own coaching company in 2020. And that was the Passion MBA. So the Passion MBA is my fourth life. And I started that. I used my experiences in pivoting careers. I tried it on friends. I had a methodology, which is based on my practical experience. And it worked. I tried it on other people. It worked. And luckily, the last 3 years, it shows a lot of potential and hundreds of people who really benefit from that. This is what brings me to my fifth life. And my fifth life is, I thought, having in mind post-pandemic, you know, some economic trends like the Great Resignation, Quiet Quitting, and many others. There are millions of people who are leaving their jobs willingly without alternatives, right? And I thought there must be a solution for this because I haven't seen enough efforts in the market, whether from, you know, government, always in a traditional way. Oh, of course, we can jump into a solution. But my fifth life is to build a tech startup that supports those people, help them to find their dream career in a seamlessly, smoothly way.
You know, I think it certainly sounds like you're constantly seeking ways to, let's call it, to reinvent yourself, right? What has generally fueled your desire or your drive for self-discovery?
Well, I think I figured out early in my life that I shouldn't work on something I'm not passionate about. And if I have to do for some time, I have to find a way to love it. Until I found something I'm passionate about. And I had that in pharmacy. And just to figure out why how you are passionate about something, try to link it with a purpose, a bigger purpose, like why you're doing this. In pharmacy, I didn't have that big passion. I saw my life in the future, how it would end up if I just continue 5-10 years and I would see myself, because I saw my future bosses. I saw my bosses at that time and how I would end up like them. And I imagine an interesting life in diplomacy where I could travel the world, where I could learn other languages, where I would represent my culture in a best possible way, where I learn about other cultures and many, many potential, you know. And I thought of that life would give me more freedom. And I saw how that is linking me to a bigger purpose. And that purpose was, at least at that moment, was to represent my culture in a better way. And that's what helped me really to fight to get to that, you know, that level. Somehow, when you think you are somehow stuck or you reach a plateau in your career, which happened after 10 years in diplomacy, you have to find another purpose.
Sure.
You have to really to find another passion and link it to another purpose. In banking, because in the last 3 years of my diplomacy career, I was working actually on, I was in China, I was in charge of bilateral relationship, and I was working on Chinese infrastructure project in Egypt. So I built that expertise over 3 years. I thought I could do more. And when I moved to banking, I could transfer that skill with me and that expertise with me. And then my passion and my purpose for some time was to, you know, add value to some developing nations, including my country in Egypt, and bring investments in infrastructure. So that was a purpose for some time. And when you do so, you have somehow the shortcut to have an impact. You know, somehow the universe helps you to do it. And I have seen that. So in 4 years in banking, I was a reason to bring investment worth of $1.1 billion worth of investment to the Middle East. I assume in many, many, many other cases, it's impossible to happen. But I think having that intention and that purpose, doing things with passion, would maybe ease things, you know, to reach to your goals.
Were those some of the things that you discovered about yourself along the way, like the resilience, the curiosity, the creativity in terms of, you know, leaving one thing and then embarking on something new? Like, what were some of the other things maybe that you discovered about yourself, about who you were as a person, and that self-reflection?
Yeah, I mean, we grow up mostly, you know, there are a lot of circles around us that impact the way we act, right, to life, our personality. So one of my traits was I was very shy kid, very introverted. And deciding to move to diplomacy was a big challenge because if you're a shy introverted, and then how would you, right, communicate? How would you speak publicly? How would you interact with other, you know, how you speak in other languages, how would you, many, many questions. And I was faced with that, like people around me when I was a pharmacist were saying, you know, you're shy, actually, you know, the diplomacy doesn't suit you. But then if you have that passion and link it with a purpose, then it gets easier to turn your weaknesses into your strength. We'll talk also about the book, because this is one of the myths, and I got that advice a lot from my ex-bosses, is you would rather work on your strength rather than your weaknesses all the time. Mm-hmm. So for example, in banking, one of my strengths was communication. But people around me didn't know that I didn't have that skill back, you know, in the days when I was a pharmacist or was starting my career as a diplomat. But just because it was a passion and I managed to link it to a purpose, it helped me to change and turn that weakness into strength.
Sort of still sticking in this theme of the different career lives that you've lived, that you've pursued. If you had to pick one, which one would you say has been the most rewarding so far?
I always think about this question. Thanks for asking that. But the answer without thinking is all of the above.
Okay.
I really seeing every direction of those careers, and then seeing the benefits and the value that I added into myself and the holistic view that I see life with and from, the perspective and experience that I built, I think it's worthless. You know, it's really an experience that when you have in-depth experience across different careers, this is where the magic happens. When you can collect, you know, and connect the dots together. And I'm an advocate for this. So it's not only about like what I'm doing right now. I'm not only helping people to change careers. I'm advocating for, I call it being a career shifter. Specialization is important. In many, many industries, you need, you know, a number of years of experience and expertise in a specific industry to have the right, you know, work and skill. But at the same time, going out of expertise, doing something else, enlighten your experience. And we can talk a lot about that. So, for example, in Pennsylvania, University of Pennsylvania, they did this very interesting study on ophthalmologists. So they divided the students into two parts. The first section, they did a very traditional study. And the second one, they took them out to study art in museums, you know, do something different. And they monitor both, and they found that the second part, the second section, excelled more in their careers as ophthalmologists compared to the traditional way. So it's always important to go out of your experience, do something different, even if you want to stick and stuck to in your career.
Similar to you, I've been blessed enough to have lived in, you know, different corners of the world, you know, because of my dad's career. But from your perspective, you know, having lived a significant portion of your life, let's call it as a global citizen, right? Living in different parts of the world. How has that worldly exposure, you know, to different cultures, environments, people shaped your perspective on life and let's just say business as well?
It's very important. And I always advise people who never had that experience out of their country, I advise them at least for 1 year, go out, you know, learn something else. You're going to grow more and learn more in 1 year than in 10 years back in your culture. Also, I had that experience early because my dad used to travel, used to work in government, the government, and used to travel a lot. So I had that perspective early in my life. And I thought, this is the life I want to have because the world is much bigger than one specific culture or country or whatever. And wisdom exists almost everywhere across, you know, the globe. So to collect that wisdom and, you know, learn about other cultures, speak of, you know, different tongues and dialects and languages, was very important for me. I still see right now the world is all mine, is all my home. So I still this is my lifestyle. I don't stay in the same country for more than a couple of months. I cannot do that, even if I'm based in Italy, between Italy and San Francisco. But I still like that lifestyle. And also the type of work that I'm doing, you can do it from anywhere.
Sure.
And so much to explore, you know, so much to learn every single day when you travel. As a diplomat, I get to serve my country in different countries. You're going to stay in and live in one country for a few years. You're going to learn a lot about that country, in-depth experience, you know, how to handle everything, how to negotiate there. And then from a banking experience, mm-hmm. Mostly you deal and negotiate deals with almost every specific culture in Asia, all the way to the Middle East, all the way to Latin America. And that really expands your horizon, you know. Working also with a boss from a specific culture, you get to know more how to, you know, how that would impact the team. And then I did a bit of study, academic study on, in my MBA on, let's say, you know, specific leadership styles, cultural leadership style. For example, if an American leadership style, a British leadership, a French, Indian, like I went across different leadership styles and I saw how that was impacting performance of employees, professionals, subordinates coming from different cultures. So it gives you a whole new perspective of things because we come from different cultures, whether look for example at the Nordic cultures. It's very egalitarian, so the leadership style there is not based on orders. You know, you are one of the team as a boss, and compare that to different other cultures, whether in South Asia, Southeast Asia, the Middle East, and others, Latin America, and you will see more hierarchy kind of thing. So learning all those cultural aspects is very interesting and very enriching.
Yeah, I would almost liken it to being a child, right? Like you're a sponge and you're just absorbing everything that's around you, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, right? And that really kind of shapes who you become on a forward-going basis, right? From all the things that you've learned, you know, the different situations or instances where you've applied those lessons. So I think that's fantastic. So you mentioned that it was around the time you started your MBA that you began seeing yourself as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
At that point in time, when you had that aha moment, you know, at that point in time, what did it mean to you to be an entrepreneur?
It meant a lot. I think the first was to earn my freedom. And I thought being in a corporate world, whether private sector or government, you wouldn't be able to earn your freedom. And meant by freedom is my ceiling, my definition of freedom was getting expanded. So moving from pharmacy to diplomacy, I thought I was expanding my freedom. And that was right and true for that time. So having the freedom to travel the world as a diplomat, you know, to do different things. So as a diplomat, your nature or type of work can do different work every single day. Sometimes you negotiate an economic deal. The next morning, you do something on the political level, and then a cultural event. You know, it's very interesting and diverse type of work. In banking was different because I was covering the whole map almost. So I was traveling and supervising different markets, and that was a whole new freedom. But then somehow you see the level and the ceiling is expanded. And in my case, I thought I want to be my own boss. I want to have different passive incomes. I want to have an impact in a different way. And I want to have my freedom to the level that it's absolute. It's, you know, it's time, freedom of time, financial freedom, everything. I had a recent experience where I was working with one of the startup incubators to build my startup. And one of the clauses was to go there, like spend full time there, 9 to 5. So normally on a normal day, 9 to 7, you're staying there. But I thought like I'm losing my freedom somehow, and that enriched my my decision that I'm not going back to the corporate life anymore.
Would you say that your personal definition of being an entrepreneur, would you say that it still holds true today? Or I know you alluded to, you know, the idea of expanding your freedom, that's how maybe it evolved over time. Are there any other aspects of that that have evolved sort of in parallel to that?
It's also the evolution of your personality and seeing the evolution of your skills as well, because my skill set 15 years ago were different from, you know, 10, 5, and now. And when you see that expansion, sure, in your skill set and your strength, and turning, as we said earlier, your weaknesses into strength, and now you have more strength, now you are, you know, you build more wisdom, and now you see life from another perspective. And having that expertise, or at least experience in different careers, now you can see things from more eye bird view. And from that perspective, I see this as the lifestyle that I wish anybody could live, being an entrepreneur, having an impact on mm-hmm. the society, building business, breaking your fears, not just, you know, being stuck in a job that you don't like. I'm fine with anybody who is happy with his or her job, but then I've been seeing the trend that people are going further toward entrepreneurship. Just if they are not afraid, just if they can break the fear of moving forward to that, you can see more entrepreneurs in the future.
Yeah, I think we hear in this day and age, I mean, I think you only have to turn to social media and everybody's an entrepreneur, right? Whether it's people who've just started investing in crypto or real estate or whatever it might be, right? But we're seeing everyone is sort of tagging themselves as being an entrepreneur. You know, but I'd be curious from your perspective, what are some of the challenges that you've had to overcome while transitioning from one career to the next?
Well, there are many of them. And I think the first one is to have a clear vision on the next step. And I mm-hmm. see that challenge a lot with people who are changing their careers, people I work with. It's not easy to have a clear vision of what's the next step, right? So I'm stuck here. I have this experience for some years and I want to move on. How to move on? Mm-hmm. You know, it's really tough. So here I see the value of orientation, having a proper orientation process. Why are you doing so? Why, for example, diplomacy is your next career? Diving deeper into yourself, knowing why you're doing this, and because it's a tough process, you know, you're gonna suffer for a few years, you know, trying to get there, and also you will suffer when you move, and moving to that new career, you will suffer because you will see people who are specialists, more expert than you, and I had that suffering mm-hmm. when I started in diplomacy, when I started in banking. You see people there for 10, 15, 20 years, and you're just starting off. So how to build that mental resilience, you know, to support the learning and the growth into your journey is so crucial. I would also say resilience is a key, but consistency is important, because a lot of people have dreams, but it's so hard to have a consistent effort, conscious, consistent effort every single day to get you closer to your dream. I've seen people started something and then after 6 months, they stopped. I've seen people just spending 7-8 hours every couple of months and it doesn't work. You really have, it's not about the amount of work that you're putting in, but it's also about having that conscious thinking and reflection mm-hmm. on your dream. Every single day you're considering that, and considering that is helpful, that you're considering the blocks that and the challenges that you will meet along the way and how you can go around them, and talking to people around that dream and turning that passion into obsession, and somehow that will end you up there.
What you said about, you know, resiliency, even just the fact that people aren't consistent, right? They'll start something. I mean, this is something that's also plagued me as well, just in my own life, right? You start something and then for whatever reason, you get derailed, whether you lose interest, you get bored, or life happens. But I think to your point, being able to stick through the difficult times, understanding that there's going to come a point where things are maybe not easier, but you're at a good place where you still have that innate drive to keep going, right?
Exactly.
What are some of the, just in the same thought, what are some of the common themes that you've seen of why people sort of are inconsistent or they give up too soon?
I don't see people spending time on making sure this is the right decision for them. So I've seen, mm-hmm. in some cases, let's say laziness, people would just jump into the first opportunity that comes and knocks on their doors. And it's nothing wrong with that, but also you need to make sure if this is the right opportunity for you or not, right? Or the right thing for you or not. So again, it goes back to the orientation. If you have the orientation done right, properly, then the next stage would be a bit easier. So because you will face resistance from people around. I had it all the time, and I know it firsthand. When I moved from, I moved to diplomacy, 99% of people around me were saying stuff like, "You're stupid, you're wasting your time, you cannot do it." So unless I built that, unless I did the orientation properly, unless I was sure this is for me, and I, as we said, connected to a life purpose that I would have, I wouldn't be able to fight for it. And it gets back to the faith part, which I think is very important. It's very crucial to have faith in yourself, faith in God, in the universe, that mm-hmm. when you do your job properly, you will end up succeeding. And making sure it's happening anyway. I don't like the word fake it until you make it, but I would say believe it until you make it, or believe in it. So you really mm-hmm. have to believe in it until you get there. I also have seen people not able to build the network or extend their network, because when you are expanding your horizon, moving to a new career, the very important thing that you really have to reach out people around there and get to, mm-hmm. Insights from them, tips, what are the three pros and cons of that career, how I can excel fast mm-hmm. in that career, what are the things I have to learn, or tell me more about that career, how it would sound to be there, because somehow people don't visualize themselves in that new career. And it's very important to see yourself there. And for some time, imagine and visualize yourself there, because there are many people who went somewhere, they thought, for example, banking is the thing for them. And then when they're, it's not for me. So having that homework, the reaching out people, connecting to them, asking those tough questions would help you to have the right answer for your career.
You know, sometimes we don't, we have trepidation when we, we don't ask for help when we need it, right? Like understanding what, like you alluded to earlier, understanding what your strengths and your weaknesses are, but then going out and seeking the help from, say, someone like you, who's, a career business coach, to help you navigate some of those treacherous waters, let's call them, right? Where, you're fighting the naysayers, the people who are saying, "Oh, you're stupid. Why are you doing this?" Or just maybe not lacking the knowledge of how to move forward, right? You find you've hit a wall and you don't know how to overcome that obstacle. So, I'm a very big advocate of if there's something you need help with, go out and ask for help, whether you it's family, friends, whether you have to pay for it or otherwise, or learn it yourself. I mean, the internet is great, right? There's a lot of information out there, but if you want really, to get the results that you want, I would also advocate that, finding a business coach or someone who's done it before you to help you lead you through that is the way to go. On your website, you have a blog article that describes the reasons people should have plans B, C, and Z for their careers, which to me, I've interpreted that as having backup plans, right?
Yes.
So if I'm correct in my assumption, and in the context of, let's just say, starting and running a business or being an entrepreneur, what do those backup plans look like, right? So you're in a certain spot and you're like, okay, this is what I'm pursuing, but how do you put a backup plan in place?
Yeah. So first, having a plan is essential for your success. Yeah. It's very essential, whether it's to build a business or to have a multiple revenue streams or invest in real estate, you really need to have a plan. And that plan should end up with a big goal. they call it result goal. And then there are other types of goals, which is breakthrough goals. And breakthrough goals is those goal intermediary goals that help you to achieve some result along the way to get you to your big goal. But then, having said that, almost every single plan I had in my life, whether changed, whether failed, whether, you know, but, and that due to many reasons. And the reason is you're going to learn a lot along the way. You know, so it's not exactly what you think when you started. You know, it's how you are learning and evolving as a personality, as an entrepreneur. So the things I thought of or about 3 years ago when I started my coaching business, I have a complete different idea about how to do things. And the only way was to just have a plan, start somewhere, and then go out and learn and evolve. And then things definitely will change. So my plan that time was plan A. I think I'm plan almost C now, right now. It's a life thing. You have this on a daily basis. I was talking to my co-founder on the tech startup, and that's a whole new life. So we're starting that right now and recently. And we keep also changing our plan along the way because we are learning, we are evolving. And somehow today we got a new decision. Let's merge this with this. 6 months ago, I never thought about that. So in a nutshell, you need to have a plan with an end goal that you need to achieve. But then be ready when that plan changes, because it will always change.
Yeah, there's one company that I used to work for. And one of the core values was agility, right? Being able to pivot at the drop of a dime, you know, understand the context that you're in, what has changed, you know, in your particular context, and what's the best way to move forward. So I think having that ability to be flexible and to be agile in whatever it is that you're doing can certainly help you. I'd like to focus a little more on your current business, the Passion MBA, right? So you offer your clients a bespoke coaching method, or let's call it a step-by-step blueprint, to help them change their careers and avoid some of the landmines associated with career transformation, all while helping them maintain high or above compensation. Could you please maybe briefly walk me through just a bird's eye view of what that blueprint is and how it works?
Sure. So the first phase is very essential. We talk about orientation, right? I see orientation is the foundation, you know, that you really build your next life on. So without that proper orientation, in my case would take 4 to 8 weeks, depending on the client, we dive deeper into very different stuff like your passion, your values. Let's imagine this analog. Let's imagine we are driving a car together now from New York to San Francisco, for example. So I would assume if that takes us a few days, we need three essential elements. We need enough gas for the car. We need a GPS with us. And we need a final address, a final destination to reach in San Francisco. Without enough gas, we'll stop somewhere in the middle, right? And without the GPS, we'll get lost maybe dozens of times. And we'll never know whether we reach our destination or not. And there is no benefit of having a GPS without a final address there. If we apply this on our life, our careers, enough gas means enough passion. If you don't have enough passion for whatever you're doing, you will be burnout. You will be somehow you'll stop somewhere in the middle without knowing why you're stopping. You will get stuck. There are many, many manifestations of, you know, losing that passion for whatever you're doing. Your GPS is your values. I've seen a lot of people working on stuff or working in careers or jobs that don't satisfy their values. And that value is your GPS, is your compass that is directing you in your life. So you really need to figure out what you're missing and what you're doing is in line with your values or not. And if people don't do that, they get lost, you know, all the time in the middle, not reaching their destination. And the final destination is it's an ideal lifestyle, if I would say. So imagining an ideal lifestyle, an ideal day, an ideal weekend, how I want to see my life going, you know, where I want to live. Is it only about traveling the world? Would I enjoy that? So how to finance that lifestyle? So financial freedom would be part of it, or, you know, where I want to see myself working. Is it working from home? Is it working in a nice high-rise building? Whatever it is. Do you want to work or live somewhere in a big city? Or so imagining all of this is so crucial. And so you can have a destination in front of you. So if let's imagine if you have your passion clear, your top five passions, for example, and your core values clear to you, and having an ideal lifestyle somewhere a few years down the road you could reach to, your next dream career lies between those three circles in the intersection point between your passions, your values, and reaching an ideal lifestyle. It always works because it's always diving deeper into yourself. You dive deeper into what you really want to do, and you know your life, your passions. And then when you link your passions to your values, to your strength, your skill set, to lifestyle, you see yourself moving. This is a very essential step. I spend somewhere between 4 weeks to 8 weeks on that, on average 6 weeks. And the moment people get to reach to the intersection point between the three circles, they are sure of what they really want to do. The next phase is transformation. You know, so you know where are you heading, and if you're heading to a new industry or building a business or whatever it is, you need a plan, as we talked about earlier. So you need to build a plan, and that plan would take, let's say, 6 months, almost to 1 year, depends on the plan and the person. And with weekly conversation, with weekly follow-up, you know, there is a plan. We dive deeper into a monthly, weekly, you know, homework. And every single week you go out and do something and let's come back and see how that evolved. Mostly it evolves to a whole new direction, but it's just by building that plan based on the orientation that you have. I've seen a lot of people evolving to different things. I just kind of give you an example. One of the clients has or his own expertise and his, and skills in the legal space. So he worked as a judge. He was in the criminal law as a judge. He was also in the corporate law. He worked in private sector, worked in government. And somehow, when we did that orientation, it led to somewhere else. So it led to having an agri business. And we just, when you dive deeper into the process, he never worked in agribusiness, never had an agricultural experience. But when you see that through his passions, when you see that through his values, when you see when he was trying to depict a picture of his ideal lifestyle, I found always farms, I found always bio, I found, you know, a healthy food, a healthy life, all of that. And that led us to that ideal, you know, lifestyle. And right now he's super convinced with that. He works so hard on it, and he's turning his weakness, the expertise that he lack, to a strength to get there.
Yeah, I love that analogy of the road trip, right? So you think about your orientation, you know, transformation, and then, you know, the lifestyle that you're looking at and finding a way to get to that intersection. Yes. You know, it sounds like it's a very clear roadmap that you offer or that you share with your clients. I'd be curious, how many iterations of this blueprint did you have to go through before you arrived at the version that exists today?
Well, the first version, when I started this, I because coaching is trending and still trending. And that time when I started, it was also a trend. So I don't want to just capture a trend and do something that a lot of other people are doing. So I had to build my experience and expertise on my practical experience in pivoting careers. And the first thing I did is I went back, recall every single thing I did in, you know, when I was moving from one career to the other, then the second to the third, fourth. And I found trends in what I used to do. I found, you know, that there are really things I did unintentionally. But then with experience in the second time, I knew what was working. In the third time, I knew what was working. And things got easier on me. And I took it step by step until we figured out, I built that system. And then I started applying it on people because I want to have the feedback. And it worked every time with a bit of iteration. I wouldn't say more than 10% of iteration. And then I build on that expertise, learning from other people too. So, for example, one of my mentors is Jack Canfield, and I work a lot with Jack on many different coaching projects, Breakthrough to Success, and many others. I'm actually licensed by the Success Principles, his own Canfield methodology. And then merging both your practical experience with, you know, some of those, you know, very, very, you know, big guys in the market, gurus, you can see how things are evolving. You can see how things are impacting people's life. So, yeah, it needs really a bit of time to, right, put things into practice, get feedback, iterate all the time.
How do you shut out all the noise, right? So, you know, you talked about, you know, not necessarily following trends and relying on your practical experience. But how do you sift out or filter out all the noise that's going on, right? So we talk about marketing gurus, everyone's coming out with a new strategy or a tactic or a hack. How do you sift through that noise and pick what's actually valuable or that actually makes sense?
I think you really need to ask yourself what you really want and why. You know, why you want it. So what and why are so important. The how would come later. It's okay. And why is why is because I've seen that trending. A lot of people are in coaching. A lot of people are in real estate. A lot of people are starting startups. But when you ask them why, and I like to ask those questions, you know, I like to, you know, go, why are you doing this? You know, I just want to hear. If you see the answer is not concrete enough, it's not valid enough, you know, if you are not able to connect that to a bigger reason, it's not purpose. Worth the fight, right? A bigger purpose. Yeah. It's not worth the fight because mm-hmm. you will have to fight for it, right? You will have to earn it, whatever it is. And if you don't have roots down there are helping you to fight for it. I've seen a lot of people quitting just because they don't have a big why. So back to the orientation. If the orientation is not proper, if you don't know your why are you doing this, and connecting it to a bigger purpose, it's really hard. And this is helping you to filter your decisions, filter your destinations, knowing this is for me. So just to give you an example, at some point when I was just moving to coaching, I got a job offer in an energy company in the Middle East, and the salary was almost seven figures. in that time, when you're, you know, starting with the pandemic and all of that, it's a job offer that you cannot turn down. But mm-hmm. knowing my why was really crucial, and knowing that I was already enough. And all the preparatory work I did to jump out of, you know, of the corporate world. And I knew I was ready, and I already spent enough time on that. And I knew that this is the right time. And if I just accepted whatever offer I get, I will never be able to escape, you know, if I would call it that rat race. I wanted to be my own boss. So knowing your why is very important. Why I'm taking that decision, why I'm accepting that offer, why I'm starting that business.
Understanding your purpose is critical. And I think that's a nice segue into my next question, which is, you know, so if you had asked me 5 years ago what I was passionate about, I don't think I would have been able to give you a concise or thoughtful answer. And I think admittedly, it's because I hadn't devoted enough time to self-reflect, you know, on what I was generally excited about, right? So there are things that I like and there are things that I'm maybe passionate about. How do you make that distinction between what somebody likes doing, for example, knitting, or cooking or gardening, whatever it is, versus something that they're passionate about? How do you make that distinction to say, oh no, this is just something I like versus this is something that I am absolutely passionate about?
Yeah, I always say in my coaching that passion is important, but it's not enough. Yeah. What you need is a blueprint for that passion. And as you say, not every passion would work, would be a base of a new startup or a new business or a new career. So normally when you have your top passions, you really need to explore some of them for some time. So the idea here is to read about them. That's a first step. So I would, if I have three passions that I'm exploring, I would go out and buy the top best-selling three books, you know, on that passion and just learn a bit about them. And then the one I feel myself more passionate about, I would explore more, right? Because if I read something about marketing and then that lead me to something about sales or lead me around that or internet marketing or whatever, it means that I'm passionate about. So I'm exploring more that. So also visualizing yourself doing that, it's so crucial. So seeing yourself for some time. Again, we talk about reaching out people there. Asking them how it would like to do that job or that business for some time, for a long time. And then linking that passion with your values, as we said, is so crucial, because some of my passions will never work with my values. So I would rather just keep them as a hobby, right? Keep them aside. And I can tell you dozens of my passions, which somehow many of them, I just keep them as a hobby, you know. But then linking them with your GPS is so crucial to figure out something that connects you to a bigger purpose.
And I guess the same would be true, like in terms of turning that passion into profits or turning that passion into a business, right? You need your purpose, you need your roadmap or your GPS and an idea of what that final destination is going to look like. Just switching gears again a little bit to your book, you know, Time to Move On. You unpack seven career myths, you know, keeping people from finding their dream jobs or careers. Regrettably, we don't necessarily have enough time to delve into all these myths, which is maybe perhaps an incentive for everyone listening to go pick up a copy of your book. But of these seven myths, and I believe you mentioned one of them, which is orientation, but which would you say is the most prevalent or common myth that's out there that's keeping people from finding their dream careers?
Yeah, the book is the product of learning the hard way how to bust and debunk, you know, many of these myths. So, for example, the most famous one, and it's my favorite one, is call it the supreme specialist. So we mostly grew up learning whether the surrounding circles around us, our parents, relatives, in the school, that the only way to succeed in life is to stick yourself to one career, one specialization, get promoted, stay all your life there. If you get out, you're a loser. You know, if you change, you're risking your life, your career, and all of that. And that's the only way to succeed in life. I grew up believing in this. I remember I was 6 years old. A group of family members were asking me that question, you know, where you want to be when you grow up. And I said 5-6 things, if I recall, like a football player, an astronaut, an engineer. And they stopped me. And they say, no, oh, you cannot be all of that. You have to stick to one. Choose one. Somehow I had to conform to that. But inside myself, I couldn't. And I had that always internal fight, you know, with what people expecting me to do and what inside me, my heart is telling me to do, you know. And then now seeing life from that perspective, as we spoke earlier, like it's all of the above. Seeing life from that perspective, life is much more interesting doing all of this.
Sure.
And I call it in my book, the alternative is career shape-shifting. So yes, we need specialization. Yes, we need specialists, and it's important. But on the other side, we need as many career shapeshifters as we would or we could. And you know, shape-shifting in mythology, it's a being that is able to change his or her form in many different ways, right? And it's somehow connected to immortality. Right now, with AI, technological advancement, and many things, we can see the danger of such technology on many jobs, and many jobs are expected to go extinct. For example, it's expected by 2030 that 1.1 billion jobs, whether to be completely lost or completely transformed, or the way it's done is different from now. So how to cope with that change with AI, technological advancement? The answer for me is being a career shapeshifter, is somebody who's able to adapt, to change, being agile, learn skills quickly, seeing the future, expecting and forecasting the future, and then embracing that change and coping with the change and being more in control. If I just would argue a bit and make that contrast, koala as an animal is a specialized animal. It lives in a specific type of environment, eats a specific type of food, eucalyptus tree leaves, and live in a very optimum condition in terms of weather or so. If those conditions change a bit, koala dies. You know, if doesn't find the eucalyptus tree, if there is a fire, if there is whatever, and it's actually always in danger to go extinct. On the other side, raccoon is a generalist animal or a shapeshifter. Is somebody who's able to change and cope with the change all the time. So you can find raccoon in a very cold weather. You can find raccoon in a very hot weather. Raccoon can eat anything. So having that comparison and asking yourself, where do you want to see your future or who you want to see yourself in the future, whether it's koala or raccoon, I would be a raccoon then.
No, I love that. I think, you know, what is it that they say that the only constant is change, right? So things are always going to be moving. Your current context or environment is never going to remain stagnant, right? So, you know, to your example about, you know, AI changing the job landscape, I think sometimes as people, we become fearful of what the unknown future looks like. Yes. But, you know, maybe finding ways to say, look, this is kind of the direction things are going. How do we rein those fears in, right? Sure. And to your point, maybe, you know, juxtaposing changing, you know, weaknesses to fears. I'm sorry, excuse me, weaknesses to strengths. How do we change those fears into motivation, right? What was the process of writing the book? I've always been curious about people that sit down and write books. It seems like a very, to me at least, it seems like a very tedious, you know, laborious process. But what was that experience like for you writing this book?
It is actually, and when I was still in the banking career, I was doing my MBA. I think after a year in my MBA, the feedback I got from my professor is like, wow, you write in an analytical way and should write a book. And that was always there in my mind, like, wow, I would love to write a book about something interesting for people. I remember halfway down the road of my MBA, I opened my notes. I wrote 20 subjects of things I would love to write about. And then I close it because I have work and I have my MBA for another year, and I forgot about it. And the moment I finished my MBA, I went back to that notebook and I looked back again and thought, wow, this is super interesting. I would love to write about this and this and this and this. And I thought at some point that if you want to learn a new skill fast, you should learn from the best. And the best in that case was to go out and Google, you know, best-selling authors, how to be also a best-selling authors. And I get to know people like Jack Canfield, as I mentioned, somebody who almost sold 750 million books, copies of his books, from Chicken Soup for the Soul to Success Principles.
Sure.
He has 47, 48 New York Times best-selling books. So he's a guru that you can learn from. So I learned a lot from him in terms of how to write a book, how to draw an outline, how to, you know, and I stick to him since I started until now. So luckily enough, he wrote the foreword of my book. I learned a lot about marketing the book also. There are a lot of other people. Somebody which I like a lot called John Cramer. And John Cramer, I call him the father of book marketing. Is someone that Jack Canfield learned from when he was starting to market his books. So he has a very interesting book called 1,000 One Way to Market Your Book. Also learn a lot from him, how to market, how to think marketing from day one. Because writing a book is something, but thinking marketing is something else. There are a lot of things learning along the way. I had a book coach. She helped me a lot. Actually, today I was writing a thanking post on LinkedIn for her because I like to appreciate, you know, my mentors, the people I was working with. I had a storyteller coach, Jeffrey Berwin. This is one of the foremost storytellers in the US and the world. He taught me how to write a story, how to craft a story, you know, where to start, where to end. So it's a very interesting process of learning and growing. And if I see the product of a few years of work, because also that book wasn't the first book, like I would say it wasn't planned as my first book. I planned to write another book. I wrote it. I took almost a year and a half to write it. It was almost done. But that book was the how. I was helping people how to change their career, how to find their passion project or build their passion project, if I would say. But I found out from the feedback of people that they really need to bust the myth first. They really need to disbelieve in all the convictions that they had about their careers. And once they do so and start debunking some myth, they start going full speed in their careers. And then I think the how comes at a later stage. So it's an interesting journey of evolution, learning and growing and, you know, changing. You have a plan and then you change it. You write another book.
So Mustafa, as we get ready to wrap up here, I'm curious about how you envision your legacy, right? So when all is said and done, what does that look like? So in other words, how many more career lives do you see yourself living beyond what you're currently doing today? Is there a let's call it a finish line? Is there a finish line?
I don't think so. I hope not. Until the last day in my life, I hope I will be trying to pursue different things and challenges and conquering them. But let's say starting my fifth life right now, if hopefully, and thinking big, there's nothing wrong with thinking big, because sure, it doesn't take more time or effort or burning more calories thinking big compared to thinking small. So if you ask me how you envision the world 5-10 years from now, hopefully my startup would be somewhere helping a billion people to be shapeshifters, because this is the future of work. And the world gonna change in a faster pace in the future. I see that is happening. Hopefully that's one thing. I also have a big passion in my life, which is connected to a charity, it's about orphans. So I had this passion since I was 15. I was giving from my pocket money to orphans, whether it's orphan education or whatever the cause related to orphans. The lesson learned here is the more I give to that charity, the more life give me back. The more I gave, the more life give me back. Somehow right now, seeing where my life is, I wanted to give more to that cause. And that's why in the first page of the book, I wrote clearly that $1 of every copy sold is dedicated to teaching kids between the age of 12 to 18 to dream about their life. If I want to spend big part of my life in the future, hopefully it should be on this, teaching orphans how to dream about their lives. That specific age is very essential, very critical in terms of education. Also, orphans don't have the enough support, parents to let them dream, to help them to dream. I hope I meet the right people who can help me to achieve that dream. Hopefully by 2030, we have 1 million orphan kids to dream about their lives. And whoever from them dream to have a startup, I want to build an incubator, startup incubator for them to, help them also to find the right mentoring, to get the right investment, to build their startups. This is where I want to see myself in the future.
I love that. That's to your point, that's dreaming big, right? And just, again, something that you're passionate about and still pursuing. So definitely looking forward to seeing how that is coming together in the future. But Mustafa, I'd love to thank you so much for being on the show. This was a great insightful conversation for me. Definitely learned a lot, and you know, I can't thank you enough for your time. So thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, James. I really enjoyed the conversation together, and you're a great host. Your way of, you know, conversation is very natural, and I love that. And I'm looking forward for more connection in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, James.